Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hello and welcome to the Arsenal Women Arsecast on arseblog.com with me, your host, Tim Stillman. And as you might be able to tell from my voice, this might have to be a slightly tight podcast in terms of time, which is no bad thing because I'm definitely a waffler on the microphone, but I don't think my voice is going to hold up to much waffling today, which is absolutely fine. For those of you who've tuned in and are a little bit tentative about listening to this episode because you don't want a deep dive on the North London Derby, don't worry. We're going to do one question at the top about the North London Derby, and the rest is going to be a kind of capsule half season review after that. So you might have noticed I didn't write an analysis piece about the North London Derby. Did that on purpose because nobody wants that content and nobody wants an entire podcast about that. Thank you very much. But we have reached roughly the halfway point of the WSL season. There is certainly a break in play anyway for a few weeks. So a good time to kind of take stock, particularly before Christmas, and perhaps pick out some of the themes of the first half of the season. And with me to do that, I'm delighted to welcome someone I've wanted on the podcast for quite a long time, head video analyst of Houston Dynamo, but probably more pertinently for this podcast, fan, supporter, watcher, well-wisher of the Arsenal women's team, Carl Carpenter. Carl, thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me. The feeling's mutual. It's great to be on the podcast for the first time. I think it's the first time I've been on, obviously. Long-time listener as well, and I think we met the first time actually at the Euros, the Euros. Final in Sheffield. So yeah, it's been a long time. It's great to be on.
Yeah, and that time in Sheffield, that was the England-Sweden semi-final, and I had a 4 a.m. bus back to London. So I was time-filling in a Wetherspoons, and Carl and I had a good kind of long chat on that particular evening while I was trying to drink enough pints to keep me awake, but not so many that would be a very unwelcome thing for a four-hour coach journey. So slightly more salubrious and comfortable scenario to have this conversation. But Carl, you flew over. And first of all, we should say as well, today is a special day, Carl. Can you tell the listeners why it's a special day?
Yeah, it's my 30th birthday, so I finally reached the end point for me. It's all going downhill. I felt it on my run through Hampstead Heath this morning that my joints weren't exactly cooperating like they should. But yeah, it's good to be on, and it's, you know, always great to talk about the Arsenal, regardless of what day it is. So.
Yeah. And, you know, not to scare you, but as soon as I turned 30, I developed a hip problem, which meant I couldn't really exercise anymore. So, you know, hopefully the same fate doesn't befall you. But
I'll use it while I have it for sure. So,
look, the North London Derby, a bit like the sun, don't feel like we should look at it for too long, but you flew over the morning of the game and were at the game. And I should say at the top as well to send our best wishes to the woman who was taken ill during the game. Understand she's been in hospital and is broadly okay. But, you know, there's more information about that on the Arsenal Women Supporters Club feed. But we probably won't say too much more than that other than to wish her well. But, Carl, that game, I'm only going to ask one question about it because I spoke to Jonas afterwards and I kind of said, where do you draw the fault lines in terms of this is a game where Arsenal have 31 shots, they create, your mileage may vary on XG, but around about 2.5 according to Opta, and you lose 1-0. And on one hand, you could put that down as a bit of a freak result, but at the same time, maybe not. And he kind of said in a roundabout way, 90% of the time we win this game, but we have to look at the other 10%, which is efficiency in both boxes. What did you come away from the game feeling, or at least in the days since? Do you think that was a bit of a freak and a bit unlucky, or do you think it was symptomatic of wider issues for Arsenal that might be worrying?
I think they were... I think there's kind of two takeaways. Obviously, I kind of agree with Jonas in terms of it was a game that they probably would if there was a couple chances. I was actually behind the goal with the supporters basically of the second half primarily, where obviously we had a lot of the ball. And it seemed a lot of the touches were off in terms of final third, some of the decision-making about when to slip in runners and when to actually to go for goal. Some of the shots, there was a Pulova shot I remember from the edge, which was probably the wrong choice in the scenario. And that probably happens where... you know, five, if you have that number of scenarios in a match, more often than not, you'll slip in a runner and find a shot on goal. I do think that it's funny because obviously with the midseason review for us, it's been, the season has been kind of bookended by obviously the starting off to not qualify for the Champions League and then the home games. The middle has been broadly positive, you know, how many straight wins, and then obviously ending it now with the Tottenham defeat as well. I think that the sort of issues that we saw in the final third were issues that we saw at home to Aston Villa, even though it turned around, at home to Liverpool, even Bristol City away, where a lot of those fine margins in terms of player relationships, obviously with players coming back, Beth Mead's coming back, Viv's coming back, those kind of relationships are obviously going to take some time to develop. So I think that was probably the kind of the warning signs that we'll probably see, hopefully right the ship as we go out throughout the rest of the season, as players come back, they get fitness, they understand there's more time to actually work on those relationships.
Yeah, and I did, we haven't made this podcast a mailbag edition, but I did a kind of mailbag on our Substack this week. And one of the reasons I really like doing them is because you get a real sense of what's on supporters' minds. And one of the things several people asked about Arsenal against deep blocks this season, because as you pointed out, there was the defeat to Liverpool. It took a long time to turn the Aston Villa game around, Bristol City, some of those games earlier in the season. Arsenal did struggle a little bit against deep blocks and against Tottenham. You know, most of the time they faced a deep block as well. And I think it's fair to say it has been an issue. How much, you referenced it there, like about player relationships. Arsenal have changed their striker this year. They're working with a very different type of striker, I think. How much do you think that is... that will right itself over time in terms of player relationships? Because I always felt that Arsenal might be a bit, like when you bring in eight players over two windows, it's very exciting, but I do think, and no one likes hearing it, but I do think it causes you a bit of short-term turbulence. But I guess the issue with the Spurs game is it felt like Arsenal were improving and perhaps leaving that issue behind them. And like you said, I think maybe against Liverpool and Villa, we started to spam crosses. And in this game, we started to spam shots a little bit and panic a bit. So how much, with your analyst's eye, would you put that down to those relationships forming? And how much do you think maybe there's something in Jonas's style of play that makes that an issue?
I think from the starting point, we've been so used to the last couple of years of having the base of our midfield be Kim Little and Leovalti. And obviously the starting point in terms of both dynamics of them, they're very good possession. They'll helping Arsenal kind of switch play in the final third. And when we have Kira and then we have Pulova as well, they're much more willing to actually drive and take the initiative on the ball. And that can be a lot of positives as well. But a lot of times that we saw in the final third against Tottenham is that we would build down the right and basically we would finish attacks down the right only. We wouldn't have that kind of balance in terms of switching out play, being a little bit more patient. And you tell when you're actually amongst the crowd that the patience for the crowd, they want to see shots on goal. They want to see actual drive and initiative. And while I do think the game changed as well when Pulova came off, but also not having that metronome that we have in midfield normally with Kim and then Leah to kind of keep and kind of be patient, find the best opening. Because obviously, as a defensive block for Tottenham, the worst thing they want to do is have to move side to side and shift laterally. So I think from a starting point, the kind of the base in midfield is obviously a big difference. With you said, with changing our center forward, obviously Russo is much more of a player who's kind of willing to be a little bit more associative with their link up play, kind of dropping off than we might have been used to with Stina Vaksinis. But and obviously we've had Viv in that role, but she's more acting as a 10, so it's slightly different. I do think obviously those kind of relationships take time, and you know, we've had such a massive injury crisis in the last couple of years that we're not just throwing in the same players and they're getting back to their old rhythm. It's also those players coming in as well as learning how to play with others, so there's less time to actually work with them in terms of those relationships in the final third. I do think sometimes that Jonas's style of play, compared to Joe, who obviously we've known for many years before, in terms of it's much more direct by comparison in terms of that. And you know, that's obviously going to take some time to kind of to work with. And obviously the new signings would help with that because they're brought in to play a style. He signed him to actually play the style of play he wants. But kind of working with the existing players as well and the new signings is something that's going to be obviously a process. And you know, if you look at the actual, you know, the actual numbers in terms of all the underlying metrics for Arsenal, it's Arsenal and Chelsea, basically 1 and 2 for everything. It's just now that we've seen teams that obviously are able to, you know, Tottenham of a couple of years ago, there would not have been able to put up that performance in terms of age, just defensive solidity, as well as actually being able to build past the press that we did. So I think at the margins in terms of that have obviously gotten much, much tighter.
Yeah, definitely. And you hit on a few things we'll come back to as kind of themes. And I kind of want to go through each department of the team, really. But before we do that, what's your kind of just your 1,000-foot overall, I guess, capsule review of the first half of the season? Like you say, it's been a bit of a valley almost, or a reverse valley. I don't really know how that works, but you know, maybe a little bit up and down. But what are the things, I guess, I mean, how do you assess Arsenal's progress in terms of what you expected? And we'll talk a little bit about some of the themes coming out in a bit.
Yeah, I think that we're pretty much, I think overwhelmingly, I think it's been a positive this season. Obviously, you know, last season was basically a bonus year, and we overperformed in terms of the expectations based off of losing 4 key players, probably your starting right back, Viv, Leo Williamson, and et cetera. So losing all those players and making a Champions League semifinal, I think is sort of like he built himself some cachet. And I think from actually the expectations of where they should have been, which has been putting in a title challenge, competing again, trying to win the FA Cup, and then obviously the Conte Cup as well. Fans see the qualification for the Champions League, which we can get into the actual qualification process and why it's for the Women's Champions League. It should be expanded. It's flawed, et cetera. Obviously, Arsenal should be there regardless. So I do think that's sort of like the big hit on that sort of that progression thing of people from afar see that and they say, okay, well, Arsenal are going backwards, and they see that we lose to Tottenham in the final game of the season. But I do think in terms of you know, the progress of the group as well, it's been positive considering the circumstances of where, you know, everything has been.
Yeah. And I think really last season, the squad was too small. By Jonas's admission at the beginning of the season, he said he didn't get everything he wanted. And I think basically it's made the squad build uneven, where really it should have been, you know, maybe 4 players in last summer, 4 players, you know, it should have been a bit more staggered, whereas we didn't get everything we wanted last summer. So January and this summer have been, you know, a bit of a not a trolley dash, but you know, probably been like slightly uneven. But how do you, and whereas now, particularly with no Champions League football, I mean, the squad's too big. It's literally too big because we've got Gio sitting there who can't play. How do you assess like the level of rotation, use of subs, things like that that really Arsenal couldn't do last year?
I think that obviously it's hard from kind of watching on far and just looking at the results side of things, but I do think that the squad management in terms of playing the players has been better because obviously we just have a bigger squad. I think that the issue will come in kind of the second half of the season in terms of ins and outs, because obviously you might be more well-equipped to kind of answer the questions about, I'm sure Arsenal want to add, but that also means that you would have to let players go either on loan or permanently. And the kind of question is what will Jonas and the team want to prioritize in terms of their competitions? I think probably it'd probably be the league, obviously, compared to the cup competitions. So you would have to see which players would probably be able to fit in the remaining fixtures in terms of, we might need this player to come on in games where we're holding a lead. We might need this player to come on if we're chasing a lead. And then obviously there's outside interest as well. So which players will actually be able to get minutes at valuable clubs where they'll be able to fit in and play a style of play. You don't want to loan an Arsenal player to, you know, attacking, for example, just a hypothetical player, an attacking forward to play for a Bristol City team, just because they wouldn't get the similar style of play or touches that they would for an Arsenal. So I think internally, that's probably the discussions that are going on amongst the recruitment team and then the coaching staff about, you know, what is actually the rest of our season going to look like in terms of squad load. Obviously, in the women's game, especially with not being the Champions League, there's very few matches left in terms of, you know, for a second half of the season comparatively. So I do think that will be kind of the main sticking point of who will come in. I think probably the most likely one will probably be Gio off the top of my head. We'll definitely need to get games just because they haven't played for, you know, basically a season and a half now since they joined Arsenal. That's always been an issue. So yeah, that's probably the biggest thing I would question for that.
Yeah. I think Gio will certainly go out on loan. I think there's a good chance Catherine Cool will go on loan, and I think she should. I don't think she'd struggle for interest either. You know, already reported that talks are in advanced stage, not done. Well, I'm not told it's done yet, but Emily Fox, and that a right back was something Jonas wanted in the summer. And that's been a priority they've revisited, and I think a pretty high class player. That's not filler. That's not squad filler when you bring in a player like that. I think longer term, a left winger is certainly on the agenda as well. But there's also the Gold Cup in February, which a lot of people haven't talked about yet. So almost certainly going to lose Chloe Lucas for a month. Probably going to lose Sabrina D'Angelo for a month as well. If Emily Fox comes in, she's probably going to go out again for a month. So I don't know, you know, how that's going to kind of interrupt things. So, you know, there's a few things to weigh up there that, to be honest, I'm not hugely clear on. The only thing I'm definitely clear on is that they've been talking to Emily Fox and that there's a good chance that that will get done. Let's look then at, I think, each department of the team. You talked a little bit about the midfield, and I think this is in many ways one of the most interesting areas because, like you said, we've had Kim Little and Leah Valti at the base of that midfield together for 5 years, and they've played every single minute they've been fit, and a lot of minutes where they haven't been fit as well. And actually, in terms of load management, you know, you saw they both had little knocks in November, and they both came out of the team. And I think even a season ago, they'd have just played through those. But because of the kind of depth that Arsenal have in midfield, and I guess this is a question I've been kind of wrestling with, and I'd love to get your view on it. That midfield below the midfield, which is bubbling under with Pullover, certainly Cooney Cross, there's Catherine Cool there as well. And it kind of, on one hand, it feels like that midfield is ready to take over, but I don't think Kim Little and Leah Valti are ready to come out at the same time. And at the moment, and you alluded to it earlier, but they all just provide really different qualities. So against West Ham, what Arsenal really wanted was to spread the play. So they played Cooney Cross because she's great at that. When they played Chelsea, they wanted some of that more considered foot on the ball, know when to slow the game down. So they played Kim and Leah. How are you assessing this kind of midfield rebuild under the existing midfield, and whether the existing midfield is in fact ready to go quietly into the night?
Yeah, it's tough from that dynamic because, A, like you said, Leah and Kim are you know, they're professionals. Every professionals want to play every single minute they can of the game. The thing that complicates it is the way to actually, you know, if that midfield is ready, the midfield under the midfield, it complicates matters because at the moment they're not basically letting those two come in and play together. So they're never really getting real minutes under their belt playing and actually working on those kind of qualities in terms of playing together. You're just getting, you know, Leah and Kira, or, you know, Kim and Kira, or whatever the rotations are. So actually working on that midfield, you only see them in isolation with the current crop rather than actually playing out there. Champions League games, the additional games, if the league was bigger, you'd probably get more minutes to actually do a full rotation in that. And obviously it's hard to completely say to Kim and Leah, all right, you're dropped. You're not the first team anymore because you know what you're going to get. And throwing them in, you know, throwing the two newbies in against, you know, Chelsea away or Man City away is obviously something that you just, it's a sink or swim scenario. I do think that eventually, probably by the end of the year, that they'll establish themselves as probably the, obviously, you know, it's, a lot of it could be forced by fitness and Kim's played, you know, even she went on loan to America just because she loved playing games so much. And obviously, you know, as fit as they keep themselves, it's impossible to keep playing consistently and for years on years. So I do think that eventually, from my perspective, obviously I'm not in the coaching staff room, and I've known this. I always see people reading about Houston in terms of things we should be doing, and they don't really know what they're talking about. So I'm probably completely speaking out of turn here, but it's easier to basically just to say, all right, now we have to do it now or never. This is the time. If we trust them, we should throw them in together rather than kind of, you know, giving them a parent to sit next to in midfield. So.
Yeah, definitely. And you know, there is that thing about, you know, players won't wait forever. And while Catherine Kuhl's a bit younger, like Pelova's 24, Cooney Cross is, you know, she's a full international, played in World Cup semi-final and all of that. So I think that's really, really interesting. And I wonder how long it can, when I say how long it can all survive, do you know what I mean? Like, I don't mean everything's going to, but it seems unlikely in the long term. And this is fine and healthy, I think, you know, for everyone to just battle it out. But it seems unlikely that in 18 months' time, we're going to be sitting there with the same pool of players. Before we go to a break, then we talked about it a little bit, but obviously Alessio Russo coming into the team up front, that's changed things. It's changed the dynamic a little bit of the Arsenal attack. You know, Beth has come back and she largely plays, and Chloe Lacasse is kind of a bit of a copy of Beth. So not a lot changes when she plays either, which is great. And Caitlin Ford pretty much plays every minute of every game on the left. And I think that's why, you know, unfortunately, Lena Hurtig has just had so many injury issues. I do think, well, I kind of know that left wing is something they're going to look at probably in the summer. In terms of, because we knew when Alessia Russo came, she's never been a prolific goal scorer. Now, Jonas has talked a bit about making her a prolific goal scorer. He keeps using the phrase the golden zone to get her more into the kind of 18-yard box and things like that. But what's kind of, I think, interesting about this is she does, as you said, some of the stuff that Viv used to do up front that Jonas, when I say didn't really like doesn't really fit his style that much. But when Viv used to do it, there was Daniela van der Donk and Jordan Nobbs running in behind. I'm not sure we've got those runners in behind when Russo comes short. How do you see this playing out in terms of, if you were on the coaching staff, would your focus be more on Russo staying more in the box, or would the focus be, let's get some, she does so much good stuff out there, let's get a focus on getting people running past her?
Yeah, I think that there's obviously the two ways to look at it. I wouldn't take away personally what Russo does best. What I would do is make sure that it's tailored into the moments and positions where it actually behooves the team to actually have runners in behind. So more conservation of movement, basically knowing when to pin the center backs, knowing when to drop off. And as well, a lot of that depth from runners can also come from the wingers as well. So working with the wingers, working with the central, obviously those kind of runs in behind from the wingers obviously are higher up the pitch, because obviously there's space to make those runs from out to in. From out to in to basically tackle spaces in there. Deeper blocks, basically, which Arsenal will be facing a lot when Russo does drop off. You can basically have those sort of essential midfielders attack the spaces in between the opposition fullback and center backs. And those are kind of the areas where I would work with obviously when they do team shape throughout the week, would be areas where you would work with Russo to say, all right, well, you show her clips. This could be video. This could be whatever their kind of way is on the training pitch to actually work with her and say, you know, in these certain scenarios, we love what you do in terms of dropping off, but it's actually taking away a lot of those kind of spaces in the golden zones, which we're trying to highlight. So picking and choosing your moments and then working on, and obviously this takes time. This will happen in games. Naturally, players will get used to her strengths in that way. And, you know, knowing when that, all right, if Russo drops off, I need to hit the space here immediately, because even if there's a slight delay in terms of those kind of areas, it can be easily, you know, the team can force you back, they can shift across, and the kind of a threat is nullified in that way.
Yeah, and you know, she's working with Kelly Smith on the training ground.
No, so that's no better. No one better to work with on that.
Yeah, so. Yeah, exactly. And someone who also was a striker, but not someone who just stayed on the kind of penalty spot, but was a number 10 as well. Renee Sleggers, I believe, does the kind of the one-to-one coaching side as well. And I know the strikers work with a goalkeeping coach as well as that. And before we go to a break then, just on the kind of staying with the attack, I mean, Stina Blackstenius, she played in every single game last season, and I think that was clearly unsustainable, and Arsenal needed a striker. Obviously, she's not as prominent in the team, but she is the top goal scorer, playing far fewer minutes. But I mean, I wrote a piece a few weeks ago where I kind of said, I think this really suits her, this kind of coming off the bench, plan B, because of the type of player she is. Again, how do you assess? I guess how do you assess the attack behind the attack? And I'll include Chloe Lacasse in that as well. That kind of, again, unfortunately, Lena Hurtig hasn't really been able to be the third part of that jigsaw, but that kind of supporting cast of the attack.
Yeah, I think that the kind of profile of players that they are, obviously, Chloe Lacasse can obviously stretch teams in behind from wide areas, and then obviously, and Stina can obviously run in behind. So in those kind of games where Arsenal might be, you know, 1-0 up, teams are obviously going to be trying to, just by the way, if they're going to have to come in force, which will leave space in behind. But also from Stina's perspective, I do think that she obviously provides an aerial threat. She can, you know, be a little bit more a box presence in terms of just waiting for the service. Like you were saying, they were against Tottenham, we were putting in crosses when obviously prior to Stina even coming on, and there was no one there because of Russo dropping off. So I do think that it's like a, and obviously, you, from my perspective as well, it's if Stina is scoring off the bench and she's doing consistently, just do it until it doesn't work. You know, don't try to create problems and try to solve issues that aren't there yet. And obviously, every team is different. You know, Arsenal are going to be facing teams which sit deeper, which is probably why they've, you know, obviously just the player quality as well. Russo is probably better than Stina. And those kind of, her strengths kind of play off the deep block stuff as well. But, you know, game-specific teams where teams might be weak on crosses, teams might be leaving space in behind. You know, the Leicester game, I can think of a way where there was acres of space in behind and you needed players to kind of stretch in behind. So that's my perspective. You know, it's a good problem to have, that you have a player who's not your top player coming on and consistently getting goals, and then having a, obviously Beth will come inside. You have different profile of wingers, and it's just sort of the coaching team's job to come up with the best solution.
Yeah, and I mean, Lacasse was a player they wanted in January, and I think would have just been so welcome because of the similarity in her profile to Beth, and Arsenal really had to change things a lot when Beth came out of the team. We'll take a short break there, and when we come back, we'll talk about the goalkeeper, the goalkeepers, plural, and the defence.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress.
It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
Okay, welcome back to the Arsenal Women Arscast on arsblog.com. Still with my guest, Carl Carpenter. Talked a little bit about the Tottenham game, a little bit about the kind of the midfield in particular in the attack. So we're going to move back through the team now. And I'm going to start with the goalkeeper's situation. Now, online in particular, there was a lot of, I felt, very, very unfair criticism of Manuel Zinsberger, particularly on the goal. I'm not really sure any WSL goalkeeper saves that. And I think a lot of that is preconceived. I think Arsenal need a new goalkeeper, so every time they lose, I'm going to blame it on the goalkeeper type stuff. However, I don't think it's, you know, a lot. When we did the kind of mailbags pre-season, so many of the questions were about the defence and the goalkeeping situation. Obviously, there's been lots of speculation around Mary Earps as well and things like that. I have to say, in Manu's defence in particular, the only game this season where I think demonstratively the goalkeeper has lost points for Arsenal is the one WSL game that Manu didn't play at Manchester United. And I think Sabs was pretty rusty that night. What do you make of Arsenal's goalkeeping situation at the moment? And I guess, do you see it as big an issue as quite a lot of Arsenal fans do?
I do agree that I think we should, obviously, I think it's kind of a mutual thing that at the end of the season, Manuela Zinsberger will probably move on. And I've watched her play because obviously I support the Austrian women's national team. So I've seen her playing for quite some time. And it's funny because I think that she's benefited from that national team setup where she's the clear number one, where the backup goalkeepers of the Austrian setup aren't even close to her remotely. You can have your criticisms with her. I do think we should move on. But she is still one of the top European goalkeepers. That's not a doubt in my mind. It's funny because it's similar to not bring everything to the men's game, but we've seen it with Aaron Ramsdale and David Raya, where Sabs was brought in, she started playing games, and you're not sure who the number one is. And they might not be the type of players who kind of welcome that sort of instability. And I think Zinsberger is probably the one who's brought that in. Like you said, the only game where I actually thought that the goalkeeper was the reason we didn't get the result was the game where Zinsberger didn't play. It is tough as well because the style of play in terms of build up and stuff like that would probably suit Sabs more, I would say, probably. Because Zinsberger, when she's receiving back passes, she can rush, she can let players close her down pretty quickly. Like you said, I do think that eventually, just for both parties, the next thing to actually compete and be is to take all manner of doubt out of the kind of the goalkeeping process there and just kind of move on, because she served us well. I don't remember when we signed Zinsberger, probably 2018, the season before we won the league, I believe.
2019,
okay. And she's never had real moments where she's completely lost us league. I wouldn't say that she's the reason we're not competing with Chelsea for the last couple of years. So,
yeah. And I do think as well, it's because there was this kind of sharing model based on the game plan, because Sabs is a bit more proactive off her line, long throw, long kick, and tended to play in those games. She started the United game because Arsenal had a counter-attacking game plan. But since that game, she hasn't started another WSL game. And I do think that that's fairly significant. Again, I may be a short-term solution in January, given that D'Angelo will probably be at the Gold Cup, but I think that that's a situation that probably will resolve in the summer. And I think you're right. I think I'd be very surprised if Manu Zinsberger extended.
And I don't think it would help as well that we signed Sabs basically, and there was always thought that we were going to bring in a goalkeeper, but we didn't bring in a clear goalkeeper who was number one. We brought in someone who's probably on par with Zinsberger, but just had a different profile of strengths. So when you're kind of chopping and changing like that, and you know, I think it would have helped all parties if it was clear to Zinsberger and clear to the goalkeeper coming in, you're our number one, you have exactly what we want to play to Jonas's style. I think that was probably the best course of action.
Yeah, and I think Manu's best form has always been when she's been undisputed number one. I think she was a little bit wobbly when Joe had that rotation policy, and every time she's been the clear number one, I think we've seen the best from her. What about the defence then? Because obviously there's been a lot of upheaval here. So Leah Williamson injured, Laura Wienreuther injured, Hafaeli left. So that's like three quarters of the defence kind of wiped out in one fell swoop. And Arsenal seem to have, at the moment, you know, built this partnership between Wubbermoy and Amanda Illichtet. I think it's fair to say that took a few games, which I think is kind of, which is to be expected, really. Leia Cadena hasn't really staked her claim yet, but I think there was always going to be some adaption for her. What have you made of the defence? Because this is one of the things as well. So at the moment, Arsenal have conceded 10 WSL goals from an XG of 7.6. So in one respect, again, you could say that Arsenal are a bit unlucky and the numbers show that maybe things will calm down there. But Jonas has been asked about this season. He does reference, you know, we seem to concede from almost all the shots that we kind of have at the moment. But when that keeps happening, is that just bad luck? Is that just variance that will even out? Or do you think there's something else there?
Yeah, I think that losing a player like Leo Williamson is going to be tough to replicate, because that kind of throws the Spaniards into works. And as well, we've basically had to adapt with losing, she's done obviously the role well because she's a quality player, but Katie McCabe playing on the right, you know, she's adapted her role that way. So I think that kind of positioning and center backs partnerships are all about exactly that, partnerships. So if you're losing one kind of key element and, you know, you're basically losing the key kind of commutator in terms of when to push, when to drop, when to step, when to et cetera. I think that kind of creates a lot of issues, and the spine of the team is probably the most important element in terms of that. So I think that Lotta and Amanda have done well in kind of their individual moments. We know the kind of the flaws that they have at, you know, singularity, but it just when actually on possession, when it terms to actually build attacks, I think they've been very good, but the problems have been when it's been sort of that indecision of, all right, well, if you're stepping, I'm going to have to drop off. And there's kind of an indecision in that way. And that obviously manifests itself in the fullbacks. So if we see it from across, the fullbacks are unclear if they're able to actually step to the ball because they're not sure if the center back is actually going to shift. And kind of like the rest of the team, I think a lot of it's just going to be down to actually time being played. When Leah Williamson's going to come back, I think that will obviously clear things up because she's going to be the key reference point in the back four. But now it's basically two players basically learning who they are, like learning each other's first names, as well as kind of learning the individual strengths he has.
Like another, I guess, theme of the season, a slight surprise. Under Jonas, Arsenal have always been very, I mean, they've been left-sided biased in terms of the fullback pushing up. But at the same time, he has such an emphasis on width and the fullback supporting the wide players. But we have seen Katie McCabe come in at right back and kind of invert a little bit into midfield as well. And actually, even at left back, I think she's done more of that this season as that kind of support midfielder. I mean, clearly that isn't Jonas's long-term plan because he's trying to bring in Emily Fox, who I know she inverts a little bit from what I'm told, and she likes to pick up those spaces. What do you make of that development?
Yeah, I think it's been a positive development because I think that the one thing that has probably not, and especially on the right-hand side, because what Ilicic has is, and she has a lot of qualities, but one of them is certainly not pace in terms of covering transitions and behind. And I think that kind of that positioning, we see it with every team, which kind of inverts the fullback. It kind of adds an extra body in midfield to protect against counters. So naturally sitting in front of that kind of space and kind of preventing the counter before it happens is a positive way. Her passing range from anywhere, regardless of where she is on the pitch, is quality. She can get service in. She can play in the line. We saw it against Tottenham when they're pinned deep, where she can actually run and hit the seams in between the center back and the fullback. So I do think that adds an extra element in terms of the attack, and that makes teams have to kind of narrow their shape as well, which will put the wingers into isolated 1v1 moments, which we know Beth and Caitlin are very good at, regardless of what side they are. I do think that the biggest thing, and I think we've seen it more lately as she's kind of learned that role. Early on, I think that we were more exposed and teams were basically hitting those kind of the balls in the channel behind the fullback when we were getting double width from both of them. But now that she's come inside, we've been able to cover up and sweep up those transitions a lot easier.
Yeah, I think the speed with which Katie McCabe learns to play new positions is is incredible.
I think if we needed to sign it, I think we could just get her to play goalkeeper over the summer and then she'd probably be number one by the end of it. So,
and if we didn't have like 15 central midfielders, I think she could play there as well. I really think she could play pretty much anywhere. But a couple of quick hits then to finish as we kind of wrap up our half season review. Who have been, you can mention more than one if you like, but your kind of standout players for the first half of the season?
I would say, from my perspective, Pelova, just she's been a joy to watch. I think watching her play and receive in tight areas and kind of wriggle out of pressure. And the hardest thing for a team to do is when you've actually pressed a team into a good area and then one player breaks it individually. And they can, and Pelova can do that extremely well. We saw that at the last home game, I believe. I think she beat four players just on the turn. It was against Chelsea. She basically broke Chelsea's press just by turning into that. And I do think that Lotta Wubamoy basically has kind of taken, obviously for most of the kind of the early parts of the year, her time at Arsenal had been sort of as a rotation option. But I now think now that she's kind of taken that position by the scruff of the neck. And when Leah comes back in, obviously, I think that'll be probably the preferred partnership. The understanding of those two is obviously much more natural because they've played together for years. I think those are probably my two standouts, maybe alternative takes, but I do think that they've been my favorite to watch from just their development standpoint.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think Lotta, you know, she has actually played a lot of football the last two seasons just because of injuries to Leah and Hafa, but I think you're right. I think she's got to the age of 24. She's seen an opportunity here and she's really, really taken it. I think if you polled most Arsenal fans, those are the two names that would come out most strongly, I have to say, as well as, you know, a number of others, I think, who look really exciting. And I do think Beth Mead has come back to a level I really didn't expect to see this side of Christmas. I always had in my mind, maybe January we start to see, you know, the real Beth Mead a bit more, but I think we've got her a lot quicker than that.
And also just to add, it's fun seeing, having wanted Arsenal to have Alessia Russo for years now, having watching her play at college at the University of North Carolina to actually now playing for Arsenal is great to watch, obviously, because it obviously weakens Man United and we get to brag about that, but it's just fun to watch us have a true star in our hands with her. So.
Yeah, I'm building, you know, if Emily Fox joins, that's a real Tar Heel community we're building. What a legacy for Hayo that is. Final question then, as we wrap this up, what one thing would you like to see this team focus on in terms of improvement in the second half of the season?
I would like, I think, just not to bring back on the Tottenham game as well, but I'd like to see us be a little bit more adaptive with actually how we press teams. I do think sometimes we are a little bit overly gung-ho in certain areas where we're confident in our ability to actually press out and win the ball. There's times, I think Chelsea, to obviously, I hate to bring Chelsea into the Arsenal podcast, but I do think the best element of Emma Hayes is that she's very adaptive with looking at the quality of her team and actually being willing to actually sit in and actually play a little bit deeper. And I think with the players we have now, I do think that we can actually kind of live in transition moments a little bit better. So not being so overtly kind of, within the Arsenal game model, we want to press high. I think that's kind of a non-negotiable, but being times of being comfortable with, you know, either game state or quality of opposition, just being a little bit more adaptive, because that'll put less pressure, like we saw on the kind of the defensive side of our team.
Yeah, I guess a little bit, again, going back to draw a comparison with the men's team, Klopp's Liverpool, I think, once they got about three seasons into his reign, it was like, okay, I don't need you to press at 1,000 miles an hour for every minute of every game. Like, we can drop back into our shape a little bit. And yeah, I think I agree with that. I look at the Aston Villa game, for example, and I thought, you know, Arsenal picked a pressy team that day. And I kind of looked at it and I thought, we know that Aston Villa are going to sit in. Do we need to do that, like, in the first 20 minutes or so? I think once a team starts to get comfortable with the style, you can almost come away from the style a little bit at times.
And naturally, the way that we actually play, the way that we actually get bodies around the ball, it suits itself to counter pressure as well. So if you're just, if you have defensive access, i.e. you're basically very close to the ball because you're creating passing angles, that suits itself well. And then that's the next stage of that is obviously what we've seen where I kind of mentioned with KD kind of inverting inside, you have that sort of rest defense, that defensive structure behind the ball. And those are the kind of moments where you can lose possession in tight area because you're trying a risky pass, and then you have bodies around, you keep the team pinned and you constantly keep it there.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think things that Arsenal will work on, and I'd be really interested to know exactly the things that Jonas is really looking at probably as we speak over this little break before the team go off to Portugal in early January for a little training camp, which is something they haven't done actually before. And given that Arsenal usually have been slow, I think, to come back from the Christmas break, I think that's a good idea. And they've got a couple of friendlies lined up against, I believe, Feyenoord and Frankfurt, Viv Miedema said in the Dutch press. So, you know, I imagine those will be behind closed doors, but I'll try and find out the results of those if I can. But nevertheless, Carl, I've kept you for longer than I said I would. And I think both of our voices are probably about to give out. And we've both gone a little bit Sean Dyche here. So on that note, I'm going to thank you so much for joining the podcast. It's been a real pleasure.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure.
And that's all we've got time for this week. We will do another podcast probably in early January, just ahead of the FA Cup tie against Watford on 14th of January. Maybe we'll take stock and look ahead to some things. And if there are January signings, we will do podcasts on them as well. So maybe it will depend on how quickly we get certain deals over the line. But until then, great festive season to you all. Thanks so much for your support and for listening and downloading in 2023. Please do leave us a review on iTunes or wherever else you get your podcasts. If you enjoy the Arsenal Women Arscast, give us a bit of love because, you know, we're on the main feed and the Arscast clearly gets a lot of love, so it doesn't really need it anymore. But until next year, thank you very much and we will see you again soon.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.